it becomes chronic. If, however, you wake up in the morning and you say this is a good day and begin to live that way, you will find that many of the evil, negative factors will gradually disappear and you won't have to worry about them. They're gone. And you can meet each one of the experiences of life for what it is, a lesson. Now, in school, you're supposed to have a certain passing grade or you don't graduate. And in the problem of the school of life, you either have to have a passing grade or you don't graduate. And if you don't graduate, you have to come back sometime and take the lesson again. So you might as well win in the first place, because it is also going to be easier. Also, you will look over your worries and find out how valuable they are. Are you worrying about things that are no business of yours? Are you worrying about things in which the values are not worth the worry? Or are you worrying about the damage to some symbol of your own individuality? Are you afraid of loss, afraid of losing money, friends, family? Is fear the motivating principle behind all these actions that you're committing? If so, this is all wrong and you will get into more trouble as you go along. Start the day with a realization that every opportunity of that day is going to be to help you to be better. That when that phone call comes, answer it without fear or objection. If there is difficulty in the office, face it. If there's disaster threatening in the home life, do everything possible to make sure that there is no part of that difficulty due to any attitude or reaction of yourself. Everywhere, work for normalcy. Work to achieve a state that you wake up with a smile and you go to bed with a smile. And that during the day you have not closed your mind and merely laughed by not thinking, but you have opened your mind to the values of the things you have feared and worried about. A problem exists to be solved, not to be worried about. And if a worry is all we can give it, all we do is to destroy our own health. Also, all these mental and emotional attitudes do react upon the physical body. They react in lowering the function of the body. Now, as the physical body and its glandular structure are the sources of the magnetic field, the more the body is abused, the weaker the field becomes, until it is no longer able to protect us and we can have great trouble from some slight cause. Always there's this great problem that wherever, individually or collectively, we disobey the law, something is going to happen. And the only answer is to get back on the track and stay there until the problem is solved. To do this, you will also find very much improvement in health. You will find that you do not have nearly the needs for some health support. You will find that your doctor's bills will become less when you do more constructive thinking for yourself. This does not mean that just constructive thinking can take away a pain. This is not what we're trying to say. But with constructive thinking can remove the cause which is manifested as pain. And very often these pains are of psychosomatic origin. The individual who is troubled all the time is sick all the time. And if they are not physically sick, they're mentally and emotionally ill. The only way to be happy, healthy, and contemporary is to face each problem head on. Solve it to the very best of your ability. And be able to solve it upon the background of a philosophy of life that is adequate. Now we can say to people, how do we know there is a philosophy of life? A lot of people deny it. They say that all this is superstition, that if there is any moral code, it is because some small group wants to impoverish us, that we are actually free agents. But then we are not free agents unless we are free of the delinquencies which impair judgment and integrity. I think the first thing that we have to realize is that wisdom is simply the internal function of the mind. Now, if you're looking at the magnetic field of the mental body, you will see that it is stratified and it also a constant flickering of light through it. If the mental attitude and the concept held is right, these colors remain clean. If we attribute to mind things that are not right, which are not really oriented, then these colors begin to fade, change, become dull, negative, and then we say we are a pessimist. That these things are all part of one tied-in structure of processes. Therefore, we can tell pretty well by the individual whether there is a God or not. The individual who is living well, doing the job well, has a happier personal existence, is being rewarded, if not directly by God, then directly by the laws which deity has established. There is no doubt that we live in a universe of laws that cannot be broken without suffering to ourselves. This is true of nations. Every nation has a national entity. It might be called a collective person. Every nation, every person from another country has a part of that country built into his psychological integration. It is a racial factor, it is a national political factor, and it is very often a physical structural factor by which this individual is differentiated from others. Over each of these complete groups, there is a racial, cultural entity. There is a compound vibratory pattern, a vibration, and a magnetic field of that particular race. These races, therefore, become entities in themselves, made up of millions or thousands of individuals. These races have their destinies. And these destinies are very often afflicted. Sometimes these destinies, as a result of long neglect, are bad. But now we find that most of these destinies are being broken up, and these groups are mingling with others and gradually achieving a more normal relationship with total humanity. This is true of religion. Each religion is an entity. It has its own vibratory rate. It has its own function. It has its own followers and adherents, and it has its own right of survival. Each individual with his religion affects his magnetic field. Every religion affects the color of the auras of the emotional and mental bodies also. Our religion, therefore, becomes part of a kind of medication, an invisible medicine which keeps the invisible part of ourselves in reasonable health. It is a kind of invisible tonic, something that is necessary. If therefore we break our own religious beliefs or damage them, then no other religious belief can really help us until we have mended our own. We cannot walk out any more than we can walk out of the race or nation to which we belong. All these things are part of a vast vibratory structure which you can go on and along and align with practically every attitude, belief, and conviction of human beings. It is this, therefore, that is the basis of growth and the basis of the necessary corrections that we face today. We are coming very close to a major division in time. I think we are reaching a point where the pressures of our own mistakes are becoming intolerable. It's just exactly like the individual who becomes an alcoholic. He reaches finally the state in which he becomes obsessed with peculiar beliefs and entities and delirium tremens sets in. And when that sets in, the individual lives in a world of delusions. Well, in a sense, this type of delirium has already set in with humanity. We're living in a world of illusions. We're living in a world which we believe we can control, but we have never made any effort to actually control. The only thing we have tried to do is adapt this world and this conglomerate we belong to our personal desires. We want it to serve us, preferably at the expense of others. Sometimes we do not say preferably at the expense of others, but the things we want would be impossible unless we damage someone else. And all this is taken into consideration by nature. Animals have their group entities, and these group entities teach them the morality of existence. Animals follow their own laws and follow them exactly. And if they differ from them in even little way, the animal's life is threatened. An animal cannot be anything except harmonious with the pattern of itself, or it will perish. And the animal teaches, the mother teaches the young by example. A great wisdom is transmitted without a word. The wisdom is example, how to do it and survive. These creatures, all, as the Buddhists have pointed out, have their spiritual leaders, sages and saints invisible to us, who have taken on the burden of taking care of the little brothers, taking care of the little ones that are not yet wise enough to take care of themselves, whose bodies and nervous structures are not sufficiently attenuated or sufficiently coordinated to permit the entrance of an individual entity. These things have to come with time. But everything works for harmony. Everything must harmonize with everything else. We will never really have a religion until all religions harmonize. It isn't necessary that we all believe alike, but it's necessary that what we do believe is right and for the good of all. Then we can go on with other things of the same thing. Music is another entity. Art is an entity. These things are magnetic patterns by means of which beauty and harmony are perpetuated. Pythagoras pointed out, and others after him, that every musical note has its adjustment with the universal pattern. Everything is one great plan, one great harmonious, happy unity. Except man will not permit it to do this. He insists on endangering it. He insists on damaging a beautiful necessity in order to achieve some cheap success of his own. So as we coming time now towards the end of this century, the time has come for a more or less careful estimation of what's going to happen. That we are not going to be wiped out, but we are going to be forced to reconsider action which is obviously wrong. The more rapidly we accept this and the more quickly we correct our mistakes, the easier these transitions are going to be. We will not have to suffer some horrible disaster if each of us as an individual that really tries to improve the allotment which was given to us in the beginning. Each of us has a certain magnetic keynote, a certain value, and if we live up to that value, we are safe. If we disrupt that value and fall below its level, we are in danger. And in danger we remain until we correct ourselves. Now, you know you're correcting yourself when you begin to feel good about things. When you say to yourself, all these things are working together for good. If you can begin to see the lesson in each problem, and by seeing the lesson, dissipate the problem. By watching for opportunities to learn more about the life in which we exist, to gain greater sharing in life, realizing the value of unselfishness as against selfishness, the value of peace as against conflict. All these things we learn, children can learn them. It is time for education to teach us that the purpose of life is to grow and improve. That the great work of life is not to be measured in a career here, but in an unfoldment of the basic character of the individual. Someday we may have a motor or a computer or something which can estimate the actual moral growth of human beings. They will find some way to measure whether the person is getting better or not. We have all kinds of medical devices now to diagnose ailments, and in many cases to correct them. but we need a still greater instrument by which we can diagnose motives, by means of which we can look inside of the individual or individual's activities and find why he does what he does. And if in so doing we find that the answer to that what is selfishness, self-interest, and more or less competitive thinking, then that machine will tell us we're in danger. If, however, in checking it, we find that the person is kind, generous, gentle, non-offensive, very, very low and slow to develop any antagonisms, and if any exist, to correct them immediately. Very quick to forgive, and very quick, if not to forget, at least to transmute the thought from a problem to a form of growth. We are here to transform every action of life into some expression of becoming better. We are here to grow from whatever beginnings we had. Some have come with a considerable allotment, which they have earned in previous embodiments. Some do not have quite so much allotment, but they all have infinite opportunity to grow. And this is the reason for life. Our schools should be teaching growth, teaching young people to become better, more useful, and finally happier. Because happiness is to keep the rules. And if you keep them perfectly, you can have a perfectly happy life. We're probably not going to be quite that good at this particular time, but we can improve. We can reduce our unhappiness 50% or 75% in a year or two if we do some constructive thinking and also apply that thinking to the correction of mistakes in the personality. We can finally estimate our own natures. We can see what the dangers are. We can realize where the shortcomings are important. And in this way, by self-analysis, restore equilibrium. And by doing that, restore happiness. Happiness is normalcy. It's not being average, it's being normal. Happiness is the individual doing what he is supposed to do with a full understanding of why. And while he may not at this stage have that full understanding, he can, through religion and philosophy, anticipate its probabilities. There are very few people in any civilized nation who do not understand honesty and integrity, but they do not believe that it is valuable. They say to themselves, in a short time I'm going to be gone, and I might as well make all I can while I'm here. Well, that might be all right if there was no place where we're going, but that is not sure either. And it's better to be on the safe side, just in case. And if we do survive, then all that is good will be added to our allotment, and that which is wrong will be set up for further correction. We live in a world of correction, which will continue to correct until there's no defect that needs correction. And this applies to individuals and to nations. We are going to have all kinds of dismal occurrences until we begin to live the principles which we all know to be true. Of the 6 billion people we now have in the world, approximately, probably 4 billion of those people are religious. They believe in some kind of a God. They believe in some kind of a golden rule. They believe in some kind of a table of commandments. They all have the same basic concept, and that is refrain from evil, practice the good, and continue to hope for the future. If therefore we all have this in common, why is it not obvious? Why do people in the name of religion murder each other? Yet they have been doing so from the beginning of time. And they have bred nothing but war, disaster, difficulty, and death. Even today, sorrow is being generated all over the world by fanaticism, self-interest, selfishness, and these things. And what are they? They are simply the extreme examples of a system which is wrong from the beginning. This is the final fruit of wrong thinking, wrong living, and wrong believing. Therefore, if it has to be changed, we have no right to continue to believe that we can break the rules of friendship, kindness, and society with impunity simply because we hate somebody or we're trying to take his country away from him. All these things are outside of the divine plan. Now, a lot of people don't want to believe in a divine plan, but many of them are gradually being converted principally by the fact that they can't live by the beliefs they now have. They cannot survive. They become hopelessly bogged down. And there are a great many people today who commit suicide simply because they can't live with their own concept of life. And it's not necessary for them to get out of here. It's only necessary for them to change their own concept, to get nearer to the facts of things, to have a life that is real, to have a life that is founded in truth instead of in selfishness and personal aggrandizement. So we know that we are working with a chemistry, not only a visible chemistry, but an invisible chemistry. That we're working in a universe, every part of which is alive. And everything that lives is ruled by the laws of life, by the rules of living, and by the tremendous archetypal plan, which we can hardly conceive of, that governs and regulates the conduct of every living thing. Also, that even the most so-called inanimate objects have their magnetisms, have their possibilities of communication, and things that we don't believe at all have also proven to be very valuable medicinally. Something that we can't understand as a living thing can become a remedy for an ailment in a living thing. And that is because the thing itself is living, only we didn't know it. So everywhere there's a great alchemy, great chemistry going on. And every once in a while we have to have proof of this. So we have proved it down through the ages, usually by sorrow. Usually the proof has come in some form of disaster. Therefore, it is very more important now to try to avoid disasters, to try to make any further disaster unnecessary, because we have opened our eyes and seen the truth. The truth for each of us is the same. Be kind and be happy. Do good and be happy. Be unselfish and be happy. And among all things, love each other and be happy. And carry no ill will, and nearly carry no flattery and no lies about each other. Always doing what is right and being happy because we've done it that way. For the moment we do something we regret or will regret, we are disturbing the harmony of nature. And this harmony is so exact. We have a funny little statement that nobody's ever made much out of, and that is that God is aware of every sparrow's fall. And this is probably quite literally true, because every little incident that occurs feeds this great reservoir of energy and is a permanent part of an archetype that is developing. And everything that is unfinished business will have to be finished. And there is no person, no matter how humble or how apparently neglected they are, whose problems, projects, and solutions do not exist. They are all part of a plan. There is no thing alive or living anywhere in the universe that is not under law. And this law has only one purpose, the perfection of all that lives. And with that realization and that constantly in our minds, I think we can increase our participation in happiness, comfort, pleasure, and joy. There's an old fable you probably know about the Indian emperor who was grieving over the death of his wife. He was irreconcilable. And finally the soothsayer told him, he said, "The only way you will get over this terrible grief is to wear for one day the shirt of a happy man." So the vizars sent out messengers all over the country. And at last, after a long time, one of the messengers returned and said, "Lord, I found the happy man, but he doesn't have a shirt." This is the type of thing that we gain from ancient proverbs and so forth, but there's a lot in them. We want to be all that we should be. But to do that, great pressures must subside. We have gone about as far in the creation of billionaires as we can go. There's not much more that we can pay our athletes with all everybody going broke. Their stocks have tumbled down very notably in the last few days. And everywhere, excess is burying itself. Everywhere, the situations that have been built up by fallacy and selfishness are falling apart. We are looking now for likely candidates for future presidents and are having great difficulties finding them. Because we've not produced them, we have compromised everything. We have made compromise a way of life. And the individual who accuses another person of compromising has probably compromised also. It is just a case of using it when it's advantageous and forgetting it when it isn't. But all of these things show that we are having a decline which has to be corrected. And probably the great correction will not come from the top, but will come from a citizenry that has been under these pressures for a long time and is now ready to accept and support a better way of life. When this occurs, then the laws of life will be very happy. The magnetic fields will be bouncing around with pleasure, and we will all be much healthier, happier, and more informed. We will find the joys of things that are not based upon finance. We will find the realities of things within ourselves rather than any accumulation out of outward articles of one kind and another. We will no longer be searching desperately for wealth, which itself is one of the major forms of disaster, but we will be more interested in the cultural life of the race. We will be more interested in having a good home than having a great business. We will be much better, wealthier, because we have the love of those around us rather than more money in the bank. Debt and all these things are part of a fallacy that is no longer necessary. And that fallacy doesn't have to be really have God point his finger right at it or something. We don't have to say, wait to hear the thunderous voice of heaven. Because the God in us is the one that's going to give us the news. And that God in us is going to do it by the destruction of the vibratory facts and defenses that we have. When we break the laws of our own way of life, we will begin to find the magnetic fields disturbed, sickening, and while you can see them, but you will feel them. You will know that something is going wrong, and little by little, these neglected fields will convey themselves to the body, where they will break down physical functions and deplete physical organs and make the survival of life impossible. So we start by keeping the rules, and then the rules will keep us. And if we keep the rules and they keep us, we can be happy. We can be happy with the realization that at last we have found a security based upon our own integrity, which is the only honesty that can be in nature. We cannot depend on someone else to save us. We must achieve our own redemption through the practice of the principles of good. And if we do that, each day we'll be a little more pleasant, a little happier, our friends will be better. And if we run across a situation that is disagreeable, we will find some gentle way of solving it. Of solving problems without temper fits, without turning away from people we've known for years. All of these things are foolish. The only thing that is necessary is to maintain a natural regard for life. We think of deity as something that loves everything. And we are most like God when we begin to love everything that is lovable or right. And that which is not lovable or not right becomes a problem for us to help to solve. For everything that is necessary for man, man can solve by cooperation with himself. And when he cooperates completely with himself, he is fulfilling the law of God in his own life. So we have all these things to think about, And I think we should realize that we can have a much happier life by beginning to live it in a constructive way. And that there's no escape, because there's inside of us this invisible energy field. And when we pervert it, it punishes us. And this is something we can't talk ourselves out of. Nobody else can get it away from us. And no other person can change that magnetic field except ourselves. We can't have it corrected by somebody else. If there's a correction from the outside, it may give a temporary relief, but gradually the old patterns close off and the individual goes back to the problem. The only way he can get away from the problem permanently is when he solves it for himself. It's the only way to be healthy is to be healthy yourself. No one else can bestow this upon you. And so in one way or another, we're all trying to do something worthwhile, and we believe that even if it doesn't solve everything immediately, that if we're a little happier about the way we live and a little happier about other people and very glad to see the success of others, all these things will help us to be better, healthier, wiser people and make us move friendships, and we'll learn to understand the inside parts of ourselves. Well, thank you very much.